But thank you for tuning in. I'm 7-8, and this is Free Radio Olympia 98.5 Hyperstatic Radio. Tonight, I have a special guest. You might have heard about him if you are a fan of MMA, Ultimate Fighting. What do you call it, Jeff? I don't even know the terminology.
MMA, Mixed Martial Arts. There you go.
The UFC, that's like a specific
company, yeah, that's one
company,
of the organizations.
Right?
Everyone like knows it as UFC because they've pretty much trademarked it. But yeah, it's MMA.
They were one of the first to go like on television and stuff like that with it, right?
They were the very first, and they're the icons, and they're the most successful by far.
Okay. So people say UFC fighting. People say, I've heard Pride Fighting.
Right, it's another organization that went defunct. They're the Senguki now, which is the new Pride, and they're quite big. But UFC, Affliction, Pride, Senguki, WEC, it's all MMA.
And so what is exactly mixed martial arts fighting? Is there certain martial arts that qualify? Can you kind of Molotov cocktail yourself like some kung fu and, you know, like... Most of the guys seem to be like kickboxers or...
Well, what sets it apart is there's no martial art move or technique that is illegal. I mean, it's illegal to pull someone's hair. It's illegal to purposely groin shots or something like that. But any kind of martial art, wrestling, judo, jiu-jitsu, boxing, kickboxing, you know... Kung Fu, Karate, anything, all that is legal. So what you have is, they call it mixed martial arts. So it's a mix of any martial art. And it's, you know, in my opinion, the most difficult because, like I said, anything is legal. And, you know, therefore you got to, you know, if you're one-dimensional and another guy has, you know, background in something but also trains, you know, in multiple fields, you know, he's going to have an advantage. So you really got to be well-rounded.
That is kind of interesting because if you watch a boxing match or like a kickboxing match or taekwondo or something, they're both doing the same style. Might be a different variation, but they're both doing the same
right, and
genre of fighting.
And that's why when the UFC first, you know, came out, you know, over 10 years ago, that was a thing. You'd have like a pure kickboxer against a pure wrestler and a pure jiu-jitsu guy against a pure kung fu guy. And so it was like listed as what style is the best. And the Gracies actually funded it and founded it because they thought jiu-jitsu was the very best technique. And so, and it was, you know, the guy would get, you know, Hoist Gracie won the first couple ones by, you know, kind of getting taken down and almost beaten up. And all of a sudden the guy, you know, ends up in a triangle choke or arm bar or something, and then he wins, you know, even though he was smaller than the rest of the guys. So it did show off jiu-jitsu as kind of the leading technique of the day. But what happened now is everyone's a hybrid, you know, everyone's learning jiu-jitsu and boxing and kickboxing and wrestling. And even if you're not good at jiu-jitsu, you're at least learning how to defend it. So when you're going, you know, at the highest level, UFC level, you're pretty well-rounded at, you know, the different variations.
Also, I think it was kind of cool too back then because there would be guys that were just kind of specialized in one thing in particular, and like dudes would come out in like a gi and shit, you know, like they would come out representing like their style, and they look nowadays. Whenever I see any sort of MMA stuff, they're all pretty much look the same, you know, shorts and no shirt on and everything, and yeah. Everybody seems more well rounded now or whatever.
I did, you know, the sport is so young, you know, MMA is what, you know, less than 15 years old. So I mean, imagine, you know, the pro football game, the first 15 years of its existence. I mean, it looks totally different now, you know, different techniques and formations, and the athletes are trained better and harder, you know, different this and that. I mean, it doesn't even resemble the game back then. And, you know, same with MMA, like, what is it going to look like in 20 years? I have no idea. But, you know, it's constantly evolving, and, you know, new techniques and new ways to train and, you know, all kinds of things. And the nice thing about it, it's such a shared thing that everyone who watches it, and there's so many different gyms that, you know, you can watch on YouTube, you can watch the UFC, you know, all this thing, and you see the different techniques and stuff. And so you see the different training methods, and it's really shared. So it's pretty like a big family, really.
Now, you're from Olympia, right? You're from this area here.
Right, in the Little Rock area.
And what... You grew up here your whole life? This is where you came from?
Since I was young, yeah, about 9.
Okay.
And you're 38 now.
Just 38.
You've lived in this area for quite a while.
Yeah, I was, you know, I went to school different places, lived in Florida with and trained the American Top Team for 4 of the years. But, yeah, I've grew up here, went to high school here, you know, except for college. You know, I've been here, my family's here, so, yeah.
So, in high school, you football player, maybe wrestler, something like that?
Yeah, football, wrestling, baseball. You know, concentrating on the wrestling and, you know, like the individual sports, and went to Oregon State and then University of Illinois and then went to grad school in Minnesota.
So how does a kid from Little Rock turn pro MMA? How does that happen?
Just being dedicated to the sport and a lot of luck and a lot of people being supportive, and got on with a great team, American Top Team. You know, I worked up at AMC as well in Seattle, and they were great guys. And then Team Quest out in Portland. I mean, from this area, this small little area, we've had, you know, Randy Couture, Dennis Hallman, Matt Lindland, you know, Maurice Smith, Josh Barnett, myself, and a bunch of other, like, that have either won the UFC title or fought for the UFC title in just this tiny little area. It's pretty good guys from this area.
Well, you know, it rains so much, there's nothing to do but...
Yeah, wrestle each other inside, right?
Go in the basement and beat the hell out of a bag or a guitar or whatever you have, right?
Yeah. Play music or beat each other up, right?
Or play music and beat each other up. Personally, what I'm going to do is I think I'm going to go to where Jeff trains and bring my sampler and a couple mics and make music out of the sound of people beating each other up. So. That would be pretty funny. Especially coming from Olympia, of all places. So you've been here quite a while, and you've been a fighter, you've been wrestling, you've been in physical contact sports basically your whole adult life since you were a teenager.
Right, right.
And you turned pro, you've been doing that for a while, you've fought some of the biggest names in the industry, right? I mean...
Yeah, I've fought a lot of tough guys, you know, I think I've had 5 or 6 former UFC champions or current UFC champions.
Drop some names for some of the people listening that they might recognize, of people that you fought.
Chuck Liddell, Josh Barnett, Tim Sylvia. Who else?
Now, when you wrestle somebody or when you play football, I mean, you're wearing pads and you play football, there's rules about... You know, like, you can't break that dude's nose. Like, <All right. laughs> you're a fighter, and it's so different, I think, than, like, any sort of high school sport, even though there's a significant amount of foul play. I will speak from personal experience. And yeah, Pop Warner fucking football. Whoever Pop Warner is, goddamn him.
Yeah, and that's the whole goal in MMA, yeah, to make the guys, you know, either be knocked out or tap out or,
right,
you know, end the fight any way you can.
But, you know, I've been in a couple fist fights in my life, and every time I really didn't want to be there. I can't imagine, like, training and dedicating myself to going into a ring. And even if you win the person, you're going to get jacked in the face. You're going to get punched and kicked and scraped and scratched and held down and choked. And I mean, this guy's trying to fucking bash your brain in, right?
Right. I mean, it takes a while to recover from a fight. It's like, and just the training for it is pretty intense. And afterwards, it's kind of like... You know, physical and emotional letdown, whether you win or lose, because you put all this energy in, and then the fight's over in, you know, a few minutes or 15 minutes or whatever it is, and you're like, okay, what now? And it's, and then physically like you said, you take a pounding whether you win or lose most of the time. So it's a strange feeling afterwards for a week or two. You don't know what to do with yourself, and mentally you're kind of messed up as well, or at least I am.
I think that I would be messed up in so many ways. I don't think that I would actually last 10 seconds. For those of you that don't know anything about this sport, you know, check it out on YouTube or something. It is by far the most brutal fighting I've ever seen in my life. In fact, I can't even really think of what is illegal. What can you not do to somebody? When you're in the octagon, what can you not do to somebody to kick their ass?
You know, eye gouge, pull their hair, you know, intentionally hit him in the groin, but yeah, it's not too much you can't do. That's kind of what makes it. That's what makes it, you know, the best sport. Like, they close the door behind you, and you're in a cage with another person, and you know, there's no way out until the fight's over.
So basically hits to the groin and pulling hair, you said?
Eye gouging, yeah. Not too much is illegal.
Wow. Anything other than that under the sun, you can pretty much go for it.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so how long do you train when you train for a fight?
I like to train 12 weeks for a fight.
And what does your training entail?
Lift weights, some cardio, which entails some running, you know, doing jiu-jitsu, wrestling, and, you know, some boxing.
So basically, this is what you do for work. I mean, this is your
life. Job, yep.
This is your job. This is what you do to support your family. You, right. You have a wife and children, right?
I got a wife and two children, yep.
And your parents, they live in the area?
Yeah, my mom and dad live in the Olympia area.
So people, I think people would be wondering, having not, maybe they don't know a fighter or somebody, what in a person's mind would make them want to do this for a living?
Well, I want to do it because, you know, I wrestled in college, went to grad school, and I still had that competitive spirit in me. You know, I wanted to compete. Some other people do it, you know, and now they see it on TV, and, you know, they think, oh, you're a rock star. You know what I mean? There's this guy, and it's, you know, the hottest sport out there right now, and they see you and, you know, the fans and all that, and a lot of young guys coming up. Think it's, you know, that's the thing to do. It's the you know, latest and greatest, and you know, some of them are dedicated and some of them, you know, don't know what it entails and just like what they see on TV. But it's a mainstream sport now. It's not just an extreme sport. It's you know, it's a real sport. You know, they cover it on ESPN, you watch it on TV, you know, the real professional athletes, and you know, it's a, like I said, it's mainstream.
So, I've seen your name in the news recently, and you've talked to me before, and we actually know each other, not to say we're friends or we've hung out, but we know each other, we have mutual friends. By the way, I want to give a shout out, and if you're an MMA fan and you're listening out there, write this name down, because Wally Craze is about to come on the scene and fuck some people up.
Wally Gator.
That's straight talk. You're going to hear about this kid. Anyway... So, we have mutual friends or whatever, and we've met each other before. I thought Jeff was a pretty cool dude, and immediately, upon meeting him, he's a big-ass dude, and he looks like a brick house, and he looks like he takes care of himself, he looks like he lifts weights, he looks like he fights people for a living. He is a big guy. And so I'm standing next to him, you know, and he starts rapping to me about politics, of all things. And he's actually, like, soft-spoken and intelligent and knows what he's talking about. And throughout talking for a while, he found out that this is what I did or whatever. I, you know, pirate radio stuff. And he was a fan of the station, lives here in town, really likes what we have to say, and wanted to come on. And now, of course, I didn't see him again after that, and this was a while ago. And his name's been in the news a lot lately, so I said, shit, maybe this is a good time to get Jeff on the air. So that we can talk about a couple things that might be going down. Now, I know that... I mean, it is free speech, right? We're here on the Pirate Radio Station.
Definitely, free speech, right?
Uncensored, unlicensed. You'll notice we don't play commercials because nobody's paying me to do this. It's a community-run and community-supported tool for free speech in Olympia. So... Thanks for listening, by the way, and I know that you're politically involved and politically active. Why have you been in the news in the last couple weeks?
Well, I've been in the news because I've been charged with vandalizing the Capitol building, with tagging it with anarchy, peace, and some other signs on there. That's the charge against me right now. So I've been in court and had a warrant for my arrest, and been dealing with that the last week and a half.
So is it a malicious mischief?
It's a malicious mischief, Class B felony.
And in court recently, and I've noticed in the local media, namely the Olympian and some of the Seattle television stations, kind of seems to me like you've been painted as like this brute dude, you know, like this tough thug that is an anarchist, and you know, he doesn't, his philosophy isn't doesn't coincide with the court system.
Well, the one of the lawyers, yeah, he called. The reason I got my passport taken away because the prosecutor labeled me a flight risk and called me an anarchist. And unfortunately, it's just kind of the ignorance of not knowing what anarchy stands for. And, you know, and labeled, well, he's not going to listen to the courts. He's not going to, you know, obey the law and this kind of thing because he's an anarchist. And unfortunately, in the media, that term, you know, is a real derogatory name to it. Kind of back in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s when you label a communist, it was, you know, kind of an evil term, you know, worse than anything. So, and that's kind of the new thing going on now. If you're an anarchist, you want to destroy and break and tear things up, and it's all chaos, and very few people have a real understanding of what anarchy stands for.
Well, I think that's totally true. In fact, I think that there's kind of this gray area because, I mean, you know, I don't know necessarily, I don't think, what anarchy actually means. I don't think most people really do, and if they do, I think that their opinion or their understanding of it is probably vastly different than the person they're standing next to. I mean, one could say anarchy is some shit they sell at the fucking mall, dude. You know what I mean? I want to know, because you're saying you are an anarchist and that you support anarchist ideologies and activities and stuff like that. What does that mean to you? What does it mean to you to be an anarchist?
Well, what it means to me is everybody's equal, and there's no structures in society which should be hierarchical. There's no, you know, there's no caste system where someone has authority over another person. There's no private property. I mean, you can have private possessions, but who am I to say I own this 5 acres and you can't come on it? You know, how did I obtain that 5 acres? Well, I bought it from someone who bought it from someone who bought it from someone. Someone at some point had to sit on that piece of land and say, well, I'm taking this, you know, probably from a Native American, you know. So how did it come into be that I can say that's mine? You know, when the first white settlers came over here and kind of pushed the Indians back, you know, they said they had no understanding of private property, the Native Americans. You know, they're like, to say I own this land was like to say, well, this, you know, square yard of air belongs to me and you can't breathe that. It had no computation, no word for it in their language. And, you know, they shared everything. But anyway, anarchy to me means that we work together, we're cooperative. And I've heard a lot of people say, you know, it's human instinct to be greedy, you know, greedy, 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 and look out for yourself and that. But I say no, go back to the primitive days, and if you were wanting to go off by yourself and leave the tribe behind, you were going to die. You know, you had to work together. And I say cooperation and mutual aid and stuff is a greater instinct than greed. I think greed happens because of the economic system right now promotes it and actually makes it a good thing to be greedy. So I think if you change the economic system, then where like cooperation was like revered and justified, then it would be a system where, you know, people did have got along and you wouldn't need the greed.
So what do you think what would be a few significant characteristics that would set an anarchist society apart from, say, a socialist society or a communist society where, you know, it's more of a all for one, everybody pays into the same deal, let's all go to school, let's all have health care, that type of deal?
Well, I mean, some of that is a part of anarchy, but I mean, socialism, you know, encompasses, I mean, I guess anarchism is a type of socialism, is a type of, as is communism, that, you know, anarchism really is libertarian communism. It's communism without the hierarchy, without the state coming in and saying, this is how you're going to divide the things, this is how you're going to do it. The difference between anarchism and other ideologies is that anarchy evolves around the people. It's a growing changing organism that doesn't encompass people. The people encompass it. It changes with people. And instead of having a static relationship with it or with society, it changes with you and grows with the people. So it's more you can have. It's more individualistic. You know, you have, you know, it, like I said, you share and you have mutual cooperation and that in the same economic system, but it also encompasses and allows for individuality, which a lot of these other systems do not.
So, growing up in Olympia, I mean, the late 70s, early 80s, Olympia's kind of in its infancy of its current state. I think at that point, Evergreen State College is just kind of opening up and getting on its feet. There was a few people in town that were kind of starting to make some weird music and shit like that. Mostly, though, it was still a pretty sleepy, coastal, you know, small town
right.
type of place. At what point did a guy like Jeff Munson stumble upon ideas and talk like this?
I was in school in Illinois, University of Illinois, actually, the first time. I felt something was wrong growing up. I felt that there was something that not quite right with society. You know, I heard about the Iran-Contra affair and this and that, but I had no idea. I was a patriotic, go USA kind of person. You know, I grew up middle class. My parents bought me a car when I was 17 years old. Went to college. You know, I saved up during the summer on a job, and then they paid the rest. And you know, got a part wrestling scholarship and this and that. I was just like the average American guy, just trying to, you know, into athletics, into my own self. And I was in a community psychology class, and he was a substitute teacher, actually came in and talked about how funds were being used, like how it put funds into the community instead of using it for corporations and war and this and that, how much more we'd have and how much little it would actually take to make a difference to ordinary people. And it's like the first time I'd ever heard anything like this, and it amazed me. And afterwards I talked to the professor, and ever since then I became interested in it. I immersed myself in studying, you know, read the Communist Manifesto and started reading some left-wing magazines and such. And, you know, at that time the internet wasn't so big, but immersed myself in a lot of reading, talked to some people. And, you know, in a college job, this is a good setting for that. And but it didn't. I was after grad school is when I first got into it, and about 1998, 1999, and it was right when I think 1999 when the WTO protest happened is when I really got involved in it.
Did you go?
I was actually in the Middle East at a tournament. I came back like as it was ending, but obviously I read about it and you know, I would love to say I went and participated in it because it's kind of the icon for protests. But I wasn't involved in that. But it's especially since it happened in Seattle, like right in my backyard, it really spurred interest. It was like, why are these people protesting the WTO? And it made me really look at globalization and really open my mind to the fact that the United States isn't the only place in the world. You know, like I said, I got to travel a lot in my my career and stuff, and I've seen some things, and I've seen the extreme worst poverty that you could possibly imagine. And you know, I asked myself, why am I staying in this 4 or 5 star hotel, and right outside my door this person with 2 kids doesn't have anything to feed their kids? Well, I mean, what am I doing that she's not doing, you know? And I realized it's nothing I'm doing. It's the system that she lives in. And why is that? And all these questions, I didn't have answers for these questions. And so I wanted to find out. And I still don't know, you know, I know a lot of things that are going wrong with the world, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that. But I know that the economic system that we have right now hurts more people than it helps in the world. And that's, I want to try to make a difference.
So you went to the University of Illinois. You graduated, right?
Yeah, and then I went to University of Minnesota Duluth for graduate school.
So you have a degree?
I have a master's in psychology.
You have a master's in psychology.
Right.
I think that's pretty impressive, and I think that a lot of people, I mean, there's a stigma attached, I think, to people that, especially fighters, or you know, a lot of people would see a guy that is built up, goes to the gym, works out, does this kind of thing. They're going to think, okay, he's a fighter. He's, you know, a blockhead. He's a muscle guy. He doesn't care. He doesn't know anything. You actually have a master's in psychology. You could actually probably have a job making what you're making now. I mean, I don't know what you're making. I'm not asking you that, but you know, you could have a pretty damn good job and not get the shit kicked out of you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I worked in Olympia as a case manager for mentally ill, and then I worked in Lewis County for Cascade Mental Health as a mental health professional. I actually did detentions and stuff and went to court proving people were, you know, mentally ill and needed help and that kind of thing, and had a caseload, and I really enjoyed it. I loved, you know, that it was a great experience. I loved helping people, and I loved, you know, the interactions I'd have and stuff. And what kind of drove me out was the fact that I had to choose between that or fighting, because both took a lot of time. And, you know, the funding for the mentally ill was tied into the welfare system, you know, and when they did the Clintons changed the welfare and made it harder and this, well, it cut the RSN's money, the Regional Support Network. And, you know, I think when I started, I had like 18, 19 clients. And when I left, I had over 60. You know, there's no way to take care of them. You know, I ended up in the mental health hospital and it costs more money. It's a crazy system, which has gotten worse now as the funding has gone down. And, you know, a lot of what these people need is just a little support, like making it to an appointment, a follow-up phone call, a little help doing this. And they can live outside and have a productive life. And you know, I had a lot of them in a gym, and you know, got interest, you know, stuff I was interested in, and you know, did a lot of things they were interested in, and it was great. But you know, at the end there, I had so many clients, you couldn't have that one-on-one interaction with them. There was a lot of paperwork, and unfortunately, you know, it was disheartening. Not thinking you're making a difference.
So I think what we're going to do is we're going to take a break and listen to a couple tunes, give you a chance to breathe, you know, breath of fresh air, whatever you need to do. And we're going to come back and I'm going to ask you a little bit more about, I don't know, I'm going to pick your brain a little bit, I think.
All right.
I'm going to ask you a little bit more about the shit that's going on with you in the court. I'm going to ask you a little bit more about your views on anarchy and what it means to you and what Jeff Munson is going to do to save the world. So stay tuned. You're listening to 98.5 Free Radio Olympia. We appreciate it. And tell all your friends and family to tune in or dial us up, www.froolympia.org. That's froolympia.org. 360-705-9780. Yeah, is that what it is? Yeah. It's 705-9 because my name's in the middle of it. 780. Yeah. 705-9780. Give me a call during the music if you want to ask Jeff Munson a question. Do it. Thanks for tuning in. I am 7-8, and I am in studio with none other than MMA champion Jeffrey the Snowman Munson. So it's up to the kids, Jeff.
How you doing out there? Glad you could join us tonight.
Now, what exactly, your mixed martial arts, what exactly is your specialty? Like, what have you trained in? What style?
I was a wrestler in college, so I came up doing that, and then spent some time in American Top Team and in Florida and in AMC in Seattle, and I kind of morphed into more of a jiu-jitsu guy, grappling, and so that's what I do. I represented the United States in the first two World Grappling Championships last year in Turkey, this year in Switzerland, and so that's my specialty now.
So I heard something about some sort of a grappling style from Brazil. What is that called?
Yeah, it's traditional Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Okay,
and what I do is a combination of Brazilian jiu-jitsu and like straight college Olympic style wrestling. So we call it grappling, and it's wrestling with submission moves, you know, chokes, arm bars, leg locks, that kind of stuff. Traditional Brazilian jiu-jitsu is more of kind of a passive game on your back, looking for like submissions, like exclusively really. And my more, I guess, grappling is more kind of a position dominant oriented, and you know, looking for submissions as well, but like control, you know, position before submission kind of thing. So I'm looking to control the guy, you know, in MMA, look a lot for strikes, have him open himself up, and then, you know, get myself in a position for, you know, a choke or something like that.
When was the last time you were in a street fight?
I was probably about 7 years old.
So you don't, it's not like you enjoy fighting.
Oh, I don't like fighting at all. I got picked on in high school and, first couple of years. And, no, I don't enjoy fighting at all. I do because of sport. I don't see it as a fight. I see it as a competition between skilled athletes that have, you know, array of techniques at their disposal, and trying to have your hand raised at the end. It's a competition.
And there's something to be said for being in a ring, an arena with, there is an official on hand of some sort, right?
Of course, yeah, referee.
And there's a referee, and there's also, you know, an audience and stuff. So, I mean, and both, I think the competitors have both strived toward this in their life, right? I mean, you know, even if you don't like that son of a bitch that's on the other side of the ring and you want to crush him because you're supposed to, you know that he has an understanding and a respect for what's actually happening in the ring.
There's a lot of mutual respect for the athletes. You know, it's something, you know, I'm not trying to here to tear down boxing or anything, but a lot of these guys talk a lot of stuff and this. And, you know, for the most part, you don't get that in MMA. I've never had that issue with anybody I've ever fought. And, you know, afterwards you shake hands and graduate. You know, for them to step up and train that hard to go in the ring with you or cage and you know, put all that on the line, and you got to have respect for the other guy, you know? And when it's all done, you shake hands, it's done. It's, you know, there's no hard feelings. It's like, you know, you hope they train hard because you know you're training hard. You want to put on a good show, and, you know, you want to test yourself, and, you know, of course you want to win, and that's the bottom line.
That's pretty cool. I have a lot of respect for what you do and for the mixed martial arts stuff. A lot of respect for martial arts, actually, in general, and I was watching an interview the other day with Bruce Lee. I don't know if you're a fan or anything.
I know him.
But I mean, you know, martial arts, especially anything on film, you know, he has a legendary status as far as bringing it to Western culture and, you know, really breaking through to like American audiences, especially, you know, during times like the Vietnam War and stuff like that, where at the time they wouldn't let him do the Kung Fu TV series because they didn't think the American people would support an Asian American hero, you know. So I think he really kind of broke down a lot. I mean, he's a well-spoken guy. I mean, his philosophy about Jeet Kune Do, the style of martial arts that he kind of invented, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
His philosophy is totally cool. And so anyway, I was watching this interview with him. You've probably seen it before. I've seen it a few times. It's fairly popular. It's black and white, and he's talking to somebody, and he's talking about He says water can take on any shape and any form. If you put water in a glass, it becomes the glass.
Right.
If you put water in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. If you put it in a vase, it becomes the vase. And he says, water can flow or it can crash, be water. And so when I was advertising to some people and on the internet and stuff about that I was going to have you come on the show, jokingly I said, you know, we're going to talk about the legal troubles Jeff's been into lately. We're going to talk about, you know, his views on anarchy. And also I'm going to ask him what his favorite Super Bowl party recipe is. So I got to hold true to my promise. And for some reason, the screensaver just flashed a big old booty. That just fucked my whole game up, dude. So do you even watch the Super Bowl or anything? Like, do you have, just for the, you know, whatever?
Yeah, unfortunately, I hate to admit it. You know,
no, I watch it too.
I like sports, so I'm a fan. And it's,
right.
You know, and I know it's just one of those things, just like the American Idol or TV shows or whatever, that kind of like get your mind off the realities of the real world. But you know, I follow baseball and hockey and football.
But at least there's a whole, like, I mean, you know, it's not just there's that show on TV where people try to fit through a hole in the wall.
And I haven't seen that one.
If they can't, like, the wall's moving at them, and if they don't fit through the hole, they get pushed off into the water and they lose. Like, that's just mindless crap, you know? Like, at least football's kind of like a chess game, or what you do, or even boxing, you know? Like, at least it's kind of there's a thought process and studying and something that goes on before it actually goes down, you know? So anyways, When Jeff Munson is watching the Super Bowl, what does he munch on?
Well, I was at my mom's house tonight, and she makes this. She goes to this, the Whole Foods store and makes this organic type of granola. I have some in the car right now. It's like the best. Raisins and oatmeal and honey and nuts and everything in it, like cut up apricots and all this stuff. And it's addictive. And it's, you know how granola is crunchy and hard and stuff? This is soft. Like, you right. talk about water being any shape. You can make this any shape. You put it in anything and push it in there, and it turns into that shape, and it's soft forever.
So when fighting, be Mrs. Munson's granola, right? Assume any shape. Become anything.
Yeah. My mom is the... Well, she got it from my aunt, but she's perfected it. So it's put some milk in that, have cereal, or just eat it plain. So that's what I munch on.
And you get on with your parents pretty good, huh?
I get on, a lot of this legal stuff has helped me reconnect with my dad, so that's a positive stuff. And my mom and I have been pretty close, pretty much forever. So I had lunch with my father today, and it went really good, and, hoping that, there's something positive always comes out of something negative if you let it. And, it's the silver lining to this, and as well as my wife, it's opened my eyes to a lot of things, and career's going good, and this going with politics, I'm strong there, but my personal, my general relationships with people needed be evaluated. And sitting in jail all by yourself in a solitary confinement for a day makes you evaluate your life. And so I made some changes within, and hopefully carry those out.
So that's good. Obviously, a relationship with your parents or just the, elders in your tribe is a good thing to go with. It's too bad, of course, that something is, I'm sure, probably the most important thing that's going on in your life with this legal shit that's going on with you. It's cool too that is the tool, if nothing else, that has brought you and your dad
right
back
it's
into
something.
It.
If that's what it needed to be, that's what it needed to be, but at least it's there, right?
So what is the nature of this shit, man? I mean, honestly, they're really painting you like a bad dude, man. They're really like, and I don't think it's necessarily full-on slander, but it is insinuated. Any picture that I've seen of you on the television or in the newspaper, especially the local, the Olympian, the local newspaper, has been, you look aggressive, you're a
right.
fighter, that's what they're talking about, world MMA champion, and this and that and shit. I mean, you are that, that's what you do. I suppose if I got in trouble for the same thing, they would announce my profession, right. if you want to call it that. You know what I mean? So, of course they're going to play that up, they're trying to sell, tickets, if
yeah.
you will. So, I understand that to a certain extent, but I feel like they've really kind of painted you as a different dude. How do you feel about the way you've been portrayed in the last few weeks in the media, whether it be out of Seattle or out of here in your own hometown?
Well, to be honest with you, my focus with all this is, like I said, you want to, I just alluded to, you want to make a positive message out of something that is a negative thing going on in your life. And obviously, this is a negative thing. I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to have big fines and community service and all this stuff, but that's stuff I'm faced with from these charges. So the positive spin on it is it's given me an avenue to speak. I'm here tonight talking. I did an interview with Cairo that actually they spun it really well for me. I was shocked because of some of the questions they asked, did you do it, kind of stuff like that. I was like, what? I can't talk about this. But they put a positive, right? They talked about anarchy and what it really meant from my perspective. And, it's given me a platform to speak, either via the internet or interviews or whatever. People can disagree with it or agree with it. But the bottom line is they're going to listen, as before, if I was working in mental health and I was accused of this and whatever, it wouldn't be nearly as big a deal. And so some of the negative press that I've gotten or positive, whatever, people are at least going to listen, and they're going to go, well, this guy looks like a big muscle head, he's a fighter and this and that, what's going on with him. And so they're going to listen, a lot of them are going to listen to what I say, and it doesn't mean they're going to agree or whatever, but the hope is that they're going to think that there's a different way, you know. And I'm not talking about spray painting. I'm talking about a different way to live, a different way to think about the world, a more open and compassionate place, and to think about that we, outside of Olympia or Lacey or Seattle, that there's more people that live in the world than right here in these third world countries and all over the place that are trying to make a living each day. And, you know, you to don't necessarily believe everything you read in the paper, you know, and our, the circle of, you know, the circle of life or whatever you want to call it, you know, extends way beyond, you know, the boundaries that we normally think. There's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of people in Iraq and Iran, in North Korea and other places that we have opinions on based on what a newspaper or a president says. But these are just people that are trying to get by. These are people trying to feed their families and trying to live and try to have a normal life. And they see us in a totally different way, you know. And it's, you just got to open your mind up to the different possibilities, a different way of thinking, that there's different, you know, they have a different opinion of us than we have of them. Just, it's just because what you grow up with, it's what you're taught, you know. And so I'm talking about having an open mind and thinking about different perspectives other than the one that you're used to.
I can dig that. I can dig that, definitely. So as far as, you know, what I think, as far as spray painting's concerned, or an anarchy symbol displayed or, you know, used as identification for a belief or, you know, an ideological system, is that, do you think that, I mean, I'm sure that most of the people that watch Cairo 7 News every night, maybe a lot of the people within earshot of us now, maybe a lot of the people that work in the Capitol building would consider that type of a demonstration a radical protest. And in fact, I think a certain percentage of those people would consider that that sort of action or demonstration domestic terrorism. What do you think about those words?
Well, you know, a lot of what I've heard is they're really coming down hard on this because this is the Capitol building. This is where the legislator is, has a amount of meeting. It's, you know, has significance in the community. And they said, you know, if this was the back of some, you know, furniture store, this wouldn't be nearly the thing, you know. But this is what I say, that I said this the other day. The home, a home is where the love is and where the heart is, you know what I mean? The Capitol building is a building. It's made of stone. And a lot of decisions that are made there are not helping us right now. There's people all over the United States and in Washington. I just read an article today. Actually, we just picked up the newspaper on the way over here. You know, how many people are getting their homes foreclosed in this one community? I think it said 420 in whatever community. I didn't look at it closely. You know, people are losing their homes. People are not, you know, surviving. You know, my daughter just got a shot yesterday, and they're going to, it's for the, you know, cervical cancer. It's a three-part deal, but they're going to take that off the state list. It's going to cost something like $700 now for the three-shot series, and they're going to not support that anymore. It's like, but it stops cervical cancer in girls, but they're going to take it off. They're not going to fund that anymore. It's like, it's craziness. All this stuff that we need, you know, that for the you and I to survive, you know, shelter, you know, food, healthcare, all that, all these things are getting cut. We're losing these every day. We're having to pay to go to parks, or parks are getting closed. We're having to pay for, you know, to participate in high school sports. We're having to pay for clubs that used to be free. You know, like every, like healthcare is like unattainable for a lot of people now. More and more people are losing their homes, and these decisions are being made in our state capitol. These the legislators and their and the and the lawmakers are in there making decisions that are affecting our lives every day. They're supposed to represent the will of the people. The people don't want these things to happen. You know, we need roads, we need hospitals, we need health care, you know, we need to have food and shelter and all this stuff, but these things are being taken away from us every single day. And the statements, you know, that they, that looks like that was put on the Capitol building, you know, what was it? No poverty, no war, you know, peace sign, anarchy sign. Those aren't things that are a message of hate at all. Those are a message like, hey, what about, let's end this war. We're spending $1 billion a week in Iraq, and that's not even including Afghanistan. That's Iraq. $1 billion a week in Iraq. And we're talking about people losing their homes. We're talking about all this money that we're given, you know, AIG and all these lending companies and banks to bail them out, and these mortgage companies and stuff. But they're not helping us. They're not even using the bailout money to help the normal Americans. We are giving them tax their money to bail them out so they can use that same money that we're giving them and lend it back to us at an interest. I mean, how crazy. That's like me loaning you $10 and then you loaning it back to me and charging me interest on the money I just loaned you. I mean, and they're not even loaning it back. That's the problem. They're using it for, you know, CIO benefits and their bonuses and all this kind of thing, just to kind of back their companies for their stockholders and such. I mean, it's crazy. What about the people? Why can't the government, with our taxpayer money, loan money and help out the people getting their mortgages, losing their homes? I mean, just direct, let's some programs so people don't lose their homes. I mean, why not? Why? It's because somebody, some middleman, some company, some CEO, some corporations that give to these lawmakers are not making money off that. So I know I'm going off on a spiel here, but the lawmaker are the ones, you know, like I said, the home is where the heart is, and it doesn't sound like there's a lot of heart in that home, in that legislative building.
So, not to ask yes or no, but if someone were to demonstrate, or if someone were to use an anarchist symbol as a statement, you would be more apt to support them to do it on a public building that makes decisions that are fucked up like that more than you would on the homes, maybe, of the people that work in that building.
Man, I don't want to see. I, even though, you know, the lawmakers, they're public employees. They're on salaries. You know, the state patrol, the Olympia police officers and stuff. They're on salary. They're wage slaves just like we are. They get paid a salary to do a job. And so, you know, the lawmakers at this particular time, I'm not very happy with the job they're doing, as a lot of people are not. You know, and there's a lot of different ways to demonstrate. You know, I mean, you could go up with a banner and, you know, with a flag or with a piece of pen and not a piece of paper. You know, like, you know, a spray paint is definitely not the only way to make your message known. But, you know, I've been down at the port protesting. I've been at the RNC, the FTAA, up in Tacoma protesting. I've been all over, and I've been on the front lines. And
you were down with some of us at the port, right?
Correct.
Correct. I think I remember that.
So, you know, it's not just words. You know, it's actions. What you do. It's not what you say. It's what you do. And, you know, it's sometimes. Sometimes you make errors, and sometimes you just don't know if it's an error or not until years down the road. So, you know, like going down and protesting at the port and stuff like that, you know, it's something that needs to be done. And there's a lot of people, you know, I want to allude to that. I don't want this. You talk about the publicity and stuff. I don't want this to be. This isn't about Jeff Munson. This is about the movement. And I was almost close to tears when I was at the RNC because I saw so many people traveling all over the country going there and protesting and making a stand. The women's rights groups and the, you know, no poverty movement and, you know, a socialist movement and the IWW. And it just all walks of life going down there and saying, hey, we don't like what's going on in the world, or hey, we want to make ourselves an order. Hey, we're gonna like take days off our job. We're gonna take days off our school. We're gonna like travel like on our own expense, travel across the country, or sleep on a church floor, or sleep in the park, or whatever. Stay with friends and take all this time off and all this effort to try to make a difference, just to try to get to let everybody know that I support this, or that I'm in favor of this, and that I have compassion for people. These are the people that should be thanked. These are the people that are like sacrificing and putting themselves on the line. You know, I know down at the port, a lot of those guys from Evergreen or whatever, I mean, they're taking off school. You know, a lot of people down there taking off, you know, like I said, days off work and stuff like that to go down and say, hey, you know, it's worth it to me to lose some money. It's worth it to me to, like, a classes I'm paying for to take off for, because I believe so much in this. And you can see the passion that a lot of these people have and that they know they're right. They know that we have to get along and we have to try and help one another. And when I see that, man, I was the RNC, I was close to tears, man. It was like an unbelievable force that you could feel, the spirit within people wanting to help each other. And that's what anarchy is about. That's what, like, coming together. And not everyone there, obviously, was an anarchist or had the same political beat, but it was a coming together of people under a common cause, a common feeling that we need to help one another. We need to have compassion, and we need to help. The greatest saying I've ever heard is, you know, to quote Che, he said something to the effect of, you know, I don't want to be thought of as crazy, whatever, but the true comrade or the true revolutionary is motivated by great feelings of love. And man, that's what it is. It's about love. It's loving your fellow person, loving you and having compassion and being able to do things for them and making sacrifices and caring enough about other people that you're willing to make a difference. And that is what it's all about. It's all about love. It's about love of other people and wanting to get along. And when we're put in an economic system that we're in now, a society where we're thrown in a box with and given trinkets by those who are in charge and by the rulers who take 95% and we're fighting for the last 5, of course you're going to fight. They say, oh, you're greedy. Well, you're not greedy. You're trying to survive. We're put in a survival mode, trying to make our mortgage. We compete with each other. We compete for a job. We compete for money. We compete for food. We compete for health care. We compete for, you know, space, for this, for that, for, you know, land.
For shit that doesn't even matter, beauty and wealth and possessions and...
It doesn't. We could share it all.
Stature.
We could actually share this stuff. You know what I mean? If you're willing to work, if you're willing to participate in society, why should you not have food? Why should you not have shelter? Why should you not have health care? Why should you not have education? Why should you not have transportation? Everybody who participates in society should have access to these things, the general thing. And there's enough for everybody. That's the thing. We all could have a car. We all could have a house without worrying about paying a mortgage, without being foreclosed on if we lose our jobs because of the economy. We all could take our kids to see the doctor and not worry that we're going to be saddled with a doctor bill we can't see or go and actually be turned away because we can't afford it. All these things would be eliminated under a system where we were able to share these kind of things. We all have more, and we'd have more free time as well. And to be able to do the things we want. 54% of the people in the world, according to the UN, don't get enough to eat every night. 54%. And this doesn't include all the people that are struggling to make mortgages or working 50 hours a week just to keep food on the table, all this stuff. How many people can actually, what I call self-actualize, how to take a psychology term, I guess, they can do what they want to do? I am so blessed. I can't believe it. I'm able to train and fight, travel, have a family. You know, I'm a wage slave, but I've been blessed in so many ways. How many people can be the next UFC champion, can be the next guy to invent, you know, a medicine or be the next great poet or be the next Usain Bolt and set a world record in the Olympics? Very few people have those opportunities because they're just struggling to survive. They're struggling to put bread on the table or keep a shelter over the kids' home. They don't have time to go train. They don't have time to go paint or think about their, like, goals or beauty or their dreams. They're just trying to survive, and it's a complete waste. That's the thing about capitalism. It's a complete waste of the human potential, and that's worse, I think, than people starving to death.
So I think at this point there might be a few people out there like, okay, dude can talk the talk, but being gifted or being maybe not gifted but lucky or whatever you want to call it enough to be, you know, an MMA world champion, to be on the television, to be known, what is a guy like Jeff Munson going to do with that to help the cause? Now, you said something to me earlier today about Nicaragua.
Right. You know, like I said, I want this to be about everybody. I want this people to... You know, I'm grateful that I'm being on the show tonight, and that, like, you know, sometimes I'm, you know, I have a platform to speak and people listen. But, you know, this is about, I really want to emphasize how many people really give out there. And there's a lot of people that they give up so much more than me, that sacrifice so much and have so much compassion for people. And, you know, one of these places is Nicaragua. We have, you know, some generous folks out there. And what we're trying to do is set up a school, a grade school. If you don't have money there, which most people don't, it's the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere outside of Haiti. And most kids can't go to school there. So we're trying to set up a, you know, elementary school and a trade school and a community center and try to make a difference, you know, just.
And this isn't radio fluff bullshit. I mean, you actually own land down there and everything.
Yeah, I own
right?
land, and we're going to turn it into a school, and we're going to make a difference. This is when I'm done fighting, that's my dream, to go down there, settle down, live simple, wear flip-flops and shorts all day and teach in a school and try to make a difference, even if it's for one small community. But, you know, that's what we need, like that kind of cooperation. And, you know, this isn't about me. This is about, like, all the people that are going to be involved in that. I've already had people from Olympia and Centralia, you know, some doctors up there, you know, offer to help out with some medical supplies and some, you know, volunteer stuff. So, I mean, if the word gets out about this stuff, you know, it's like a good kind of virus, man. It's, you know, it spreads and spreads and spreads and spreads and doesn't stop. And they, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have that love for other people and they just don't know how to express it. They're so caught up in their daily life and working so hard to, you know, make ends meet. And then at the end of the day, you want to collapse in front of, you know, American Idol or whatever it is. And you just don't have time for yourself and you don't have time for other people. But with opportunities put in your face, like, look, you can make a difference. You actually, you can make a difference. You don't have to send $5 into something. You know, you can actually get up and say, hey, we're not, I don't want to take this anymore. You stand outside the Capitol and go, hey, I want you to change the law. I want you to stand in front of a striker unit tank that's going through and go, hey, look, we don't want you to go to Iraq. You know, we support our troops 100%. We support you to come home to be with your families. We support you to live your life and not get shot and not shoot other people. We support you because we love you. We care about you. We want you to be with your families and your jobs and live your life the way you want. We know you don't want to be in Iraq. You know, that's how we support, you know, doing the rah-rah, go USA. That doesn't help them when they're getting shot at. That waving the flag here in the country when they're going off, you know, to a war that nobody wants doesn't help them in the least. Trying to get them home, you know, Vietnam ended not because we were losing militarily, because it became political suicide to support the war. You're supporting the war, you weren't going to be in office anymore. And that was the quickest way to end that war. When enough people said, you know what, this is wrong, then it can. They came home, you know. In this war, we're not allowed to see the bodies coming home. We're not allowed to see, you know, the funerals, the American flags, and the people crying. And there's very few very little footage on, you know, the people dying. There, all we get is a number. All three people died this week. Oh, another soldier died. Oh, this person died. That's all we get is numbers, numbers, numbers. It doesn't even tell the human loss there, and the close to 800,000 civilians that have died here. I mean, it's 800,000 people have died, you know, and most of them civilians there. I mean, it's craziness. But to us, it's just a number, and we don't see it. And so it doesn't get – I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but it's something like when we're talking about making a difference, everyone can make a difference. You know, tell your neighbor, get up, you know, start – you know, look at a school you can support. Look at someone you can sponsor. Look at, you know, trying to send a letter to your congressman. Do something.
You know, as much as I like watching you fight, I'm actually pretty goddamn interested to see what you do after you retire. So it's good to see that you have a vision and that you have some goals and that you have passions and things that you're going to pursue after fighting is over or even while fighting, I would imagine. You do have a couple fights coming up, right?
They got my passport, but I'm looking to fight.
So just to end the whole court thing and to put that to the side, and we'll talk about maybe Jeff Munson 5 years from now. You're in the proceedings right now. They took your passport. You pled
not guilty.
Not guilty, and so it's ongoing at this point. If anybody's ever been involved in the political system in this state, they'll know that this goes on for a while. So as of right now, they took your passport.
Yeah.
You have two fights coming up in the next couple months. Where are your fights at?
St. Petersburg, Russia, February 28th, and then March 20th in Tokyo, Japan. So we've petitioned to get my passport back, and it looks all right. You know, the thing is, I got a family, and this isn't about going on vacation or like having a good time. This is about me doing a job. You know, I have a job to do. I already had the contract signed. You know, I have my family here, my wife and kids, and my whole life is right here. You know, my job is here. You know, I'm not going anywhere. So Hopefully we can get the passwords back so I can go do my job. You know, I have charges here and I'm going to face them, and, you know, I hope it works out good for me. But the bottom line is, you know, I want to go do my job. So, you know, I gotta rent. I don't own a house. I got a rent to pay. I got, you know, bills to pay, and, you know.
So for anybody that thinks that you know, live on Sunset Boulevard or something, in a, you know, Rolls Royce or something, like, around Hollywood.
I live fight to fight. I literally live fight to fight. And if a fight's taken away, I'm struggling. I got a broken hand right now from a fight, December 13th. And I can't, A, take the time off to get it fixed, and B, afford to go get it fixed. And so I got to fight another couple fights to be able to afford to hopefully have it operated on, and you know, so, but it's, I'd go fight to fight, and like I said, I'm just trying to make a living like everybody else out there. And, you know, I just, like I said, I'm really lucky and blessed that I have a job that I enjoy. I know I enjoy what I do. So.
Well, I'm impressed, and I'm personally, I'm, it's beyond me, you know. If somebody said, hey, because I, you know, I have a family, I'm, you know, just the same as anybody else. If somebody said, hey, so we're going to fly you to Japan, you're going to get punched in the face. I'd be like, no, I'll stay here and flip these tasty burgers. You know, like, I'm just not. I mean, so I admire that. I think that is, that's awesome, and what you do is very, if you haven't seen it, it's violent and it's poetic at the same time. You should definitely check it out. If you have a weird thing about blood, maybe not, but it is very interesting, and it's not just a brute sport. There is some sort of technique, there is some sort of thought process, there is some sort of poetic movements that are happening, and it's really cool. It's really good to watch. Anyways, check Jeff Munson out, and tell these people how they can watch your fight. Tell these people how they can participate in What Is Jeff Munson. I know you have a website, all that kind of stuff.
I have Jeff SnowmanMunson.com. You can check my website. It needs to get updated in the worst way. I've employed my wife to do it. So hopefully after this, she can get on that. But just MySpace me, or if you go to Anarchy MMA at Yahoo.com, Anarchy MMA at Yahoo.com, you can send me an email, and I do try to respond to all those. And but anyway, yeah, just watch the March 20th fight will be on pay-per-view, and the other one will not, but I'm sure it'll be on YouTube shortly after it occurs.
And who are you fighting? Anybody we know?
Sergey Magomedov in Russia, and then the Tokyo is Hodger Gracie, the best Gracie. So
wow,
that's a big one.
So what does that mean for a guy like you? I mean, mentally, are you watching tapes of these guys? Are you watching everything they do? And
definitely, we talked about the sport and why it's so difficult. You know, Sergey Magomedov is pretty much purely a stand-up guy with a little bit of wrestling, like a stand-up fighter. Most of his wins are by knockout. Hodger Gracie's a complete opposite. He's stand-up is very limited, but he's the best submission guy in the world. And so there you go. I mean,
so your job is to develop a plan, and not only an A plan, a B plan, and a C plan. Right.
My plan for the first fight is much different from my plan for the second fight.
Right, right. That's cool, man. Well, I'm happy that we could be a voice for you to come on and talk about some of the things that you're passionate about, and maybe give some of the people in the community and within earshot of us, whether it be on the internet or the airwaves tonight, a little bit of insight on what kind of guy you are, and that you're not necessarily this brute, muscle-bound, meathead-type dude that's just wants to fight. You actually have things you care about. You're an intelligent man. You have a degree. You're not, you know. Hopefully, I mean, there's a lot of stereotypes that go on in the world, and a lot of people, I think, they don't even think about the fact that not all of them are racial, and not all of them are about, you know, disabilities or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of stereotypes that happen to people, and I know personally a lot of people that if they see a dude that's, you know, walking around, he's wearing a pair of Nikes, they're like, that guy's a jock, he's probably a dick, you know, like, I've heard that type of shit all the time, and I think that that's no different than, you know, looking at somebody and judging them because of, you know, whatever, the color of their skin, a disability they may have, whatever the deal is, you know.
I think so, it's human nature, man. It's hard. I think our minds are, you know, we categorize things, and unfortunately we categorize people. You know, we're always surprised when you find out about someone, you see someone and think they're a certain way, and you sit down, like, you know, that old adage, you know me too, walk a mile in my shoes. But like when you sit down and talk to someone, you're always surprised, but they haven't. There's good in everybody. There's a potential in everyone to give and be compassionate with someone else. And they just have that opportunity. And if we change the way we are, I know I talked about economic system, but if we change the way we are as a society, you know, the way we treat those in need, like I said, says a lot about society. If we change the way we set up our society, I think we'll have a lot more opportunities to be good to one another, and a lot more of those, the goodness and the giving that we all have in us will come out.
Wow. Well, I appreciate the fact that you came down tonight, and like I said, hopefully this can kind of serve as an answer to some of the negativity and shit that I've seen lately in the last few weeks directed toward you. So hopefully some of those people, maybe hint hint, wink wink, that are listening, that may have written some of that shit, or that think some of that shit, or maybe even possibly, I mean, let's be honest here. This is the capital city, right? Where are we at? I'm broadcasting live. I just said fuck. Do you understand? Christine Gregoire, she has a radio in her alarm clock just like I do. These people live here. The people that work in that building, they're within earshot of us. They all have radios in their cars. They can hear what we're saying. Hopefully tonight there have been a few people that have heard some of what Jeff had to say, and hopefully some of those people might have at least a slightly different opinion of him as a man and as a person, and not, you know, hot press, as it's known, for whatever reason. So I want to say, first of all, thank you to Jeff, the Snowman Munson. If you have any questions or anything about him, you can reach him at
AnarchyMMA@yahoo.com or just MySpace me. Like I said, the website, JeffSnowManMunson.com, is going to take a while to get going, but I try to answer everything, man. I enjoy political discussions or discussions on life and learning things. And I was going to talk about having an open mind. You know, you got to learn. You got to have an open mind. And that was the main thing I learned about myself and what I needed to do, and about people, is you have a closed mind. Even thinking, oh, this is the right way, there's no other way. Even if you think you're right, even if you're, you know, think you're doing a good thing, you got to listen to others' opinion. You have to, you know, whether you're a police officer or in jail or a lawmaker or whatever, that you have something to say, you have something to contribute to society, and we should all listen to one another and have an open mind.
Thanks for coming on tonight, man. You can come in here anytime you want and sit and rap with me, and we'll play records. You can bring in some of the records that inspire you, that you get into, and you know, we'll shoot the shit whenever you want to come in, man.
I appreciate it. I think my daughter Michaela's listening, so I'd like to just shout out to her.
Sorry, Michaela, for the profanity. I am a dumb oaf.
She hears it at the house all the time.
Yeah. See, now you made me feel... I'm about to sign off. You made me feel bad. Like, no, much love to... Michaela, plug your ears. DJ Clusterfuck, who's on next. Thanks for letting us bleed over into your time a little bit, bro. As always, nothing but respect here at Fro. You are listening to 98.5 on the Frequency Modulation Band. In case you just tuned in, you've been listening to Jeff Munson. And Jeff Munson is a local mixed martial arts champion fighter. He's based out of town here. And you can catch him here coming up, what is it, the 20th of February?
28th of February.
28th of February. That's the last day of the month, right?
Yep.
Can't beat that, unless it's leap year. So 28th of February, pay-per-view.
No, March 20th will be in pay-per-view in Tokyo. So the other one is going to be hard to watch, like maybe YouTube in a couple weeks, but March 20th, definitely pay-per-view. Look for Sengoku. I'll be the main event on that card against Hodger Gracie.
All right, man. Well, we're going to check it out, and again, we appreciate you coming in. We appreciate you guys for tuning in, whether or not you maybe you didn't know anything about Jeff Munson. You just decided to stay tuned tonight and hear a couple things and listen to it a little bit. Maybe you know something about him and you didn't like him, and maybe you do now. Maybe you've never listened to pirate radio before and you can't believe there's actually people broadcasting profanity on the public airwaves. This is a community action radio station, and this is what we do. It doesn't have anything to do with profanity. It's all about supporting freedom of speech, and accuracy in media reporting and good music. I mean, how many times can you hear Bruce Springsteen before you freak out?
That's my next record.
See, I just screwed up the next DJ's first record. His whole set's down the I'm sorry. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Check us out for Olympia.org. really appreciate it. Once again, round of applause for Jeff Munson, and we really appreciate him coming in, and I appreciate you tuning in tonight. And I'm going to pass the torch to my man, Clusterfuck. Any last words?
I appreciate you guys listening. Thank you.
And we're out of here.